welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. It's episode number 511. My name is James Gilmore. Joining me today is Rick Cowley.
Hello, hello, hello.
So, because time now means nothing to anyone, the weeks appear to have elongated to about a week and a half in terms of scheduling. The main reason, of course, was Pocket Gamer Connects Digital. We told you about it beforehand. It's now in the rearview mirror. It was way more successful and well-attended than we expected. So if you're listening and you turned up or whatever, thank you so much for appearing there. Importantly, a lot of the content was brilliant. So if you're a speaker, fantastic. I was watching them. I was co-hosting at one point. It was a great time. I know some people had issues with the meeting system. We were expecting it to do a thing, or we were assured it would do a thing that it didn't do. So that's being addressed for the next one, which is coming in a little under 2 months.
Yeah, I think it's June.
Yeah, June. I feel like June the 8th is the number, but double check on on Biz over there on Rick's channel.
I should know this, shouldn't I?
and we'll get it done, because it was really like we were expecting maybe, I don't know, 500 people. That's what we were kind of aiming for, because it was, you know, out of the blue and we were all trying to turn it around very quickly and just do something that was positive and worthwhile in amidst all this carnage. And in the end, we had like well over 1,000 people turn up. And we were like, oh, God. Right, okay, cool. At least there's an appetite for it, and broadly brilliant, with a few things we need to improve, and we're going to be improving them for next time. So go and get your ticket. It's going to be great. But as a result, didn't happen on Friday. But it's happening now, and we've got games to cover. Games like that Stadia game. You remember that when they released that Stadia game, Rick?
Yeah, that one Stadia game.
That one game they did that doesn't work on any devices. Well, it's properly available for free, and it has been for maybe a week or two now. And so you can play it on your iPhone, right? Right? Yeah, maybe not. We'll talk about that in a little bit. We have got information about the upcoming Clash Royale Crown Hunt tournament and how you can potentially participate or just watch if that's your thing. We've also got a whole bunch of new releases, including things like Castle of the White Knight Beyond This Side and the Gameloft Classics bumper bundle of extremely old school games that I've been wading through. But first, the news. So for those of you who are missing competition sports, I know a lot of my friends are crying at the lack of football, and Vince McMahon has stepped in to save everyone with his weird David Lynch-directed postmodern WWE.
And then sack everybody as well.
And then sack everyone. And then start advising Donald Trump. What the hell is going on with the world, man? So that's how desperate for sports we are. But some sports can still be played remotely, specifically esports, which are coming into their own during this time. And Ulti Esports has just launched a new tournament series for Clash Royale. It's called Crown Hunt. It is going to be offering a prize of 1,000 euros. And it'll support the first 40,000 registered players. And the idea is, rather than it being a super, super pro event, they're actually giving it the position of a starting point for perhaps more amateur players to turn up and have a go as well. Now, if you want to do sign-ups close the day this is being published. So you'll have probably a couple of hours from listening to this if you download it straight on. And that'll get you into the qualifiers. And then the whole thing's going to run through all the way until the 6th... No, the 8th. 8th of April. May. That's what I'm thinking of. We're in April, aren't we?
You actually go back in time if you play this tournament. It's amazing.
Well, that'll be nice. Back to a better time.
Yes.
When I was outside. So the 8th of April, it will run until. And you can find all the sign-up details over on PG, and you take part in the tournament. You'll have to have Discord to get in touch with everyone, but, you know, everyone's got Discord. It's fine. Now, Stadia. So it's reared its head again in the mobile forums because it has become more widely available. Specifically, the free version has become available to desktop users, mobile users, all the rest of them. This was the rollout that they were talking about when they launched the original form of Stadia a couple of months before the end of 2019. So it's been about half a year. And we've reported on Stadia's progress, or I guess lack thereof. It seems that there's been a bit of a drop-off in people signing up, drop-off in people playing it, and the general consensus is not enough games being released for it, or any games being released for it that you can play as part of the subscription. You can buy games, of course. If you want to buy Red Dead Redemption 2 Ultimate Edition, you can for £47.99, or Borderlands 3 Super Deluxe for £45, or basically, you know, the price of buying a normal game physically or digitally on another platform. Only you also have to pay for a Stadia subscription alongside that game if you want to carry on playing it. So, yeah. But the thing I was excited to do was to try out on mobile, because that was the whole point of this. So, Stadia app was available on my iPhone. I downloaded it. I signed myself in. I started my two-month free trial, and I went to start streaming Destiny 2, and a thing popped up, and it didn't say you can't play this game. A thing just popped up, a holding screen, and it had a little image of a screen inside that screen. It was just like an image of Destiny and a sun, and I went, all right, I'll play this now. I hit the play button, and you hit that, and it says find a way to play on TV, set up Chromecast Ultra. To play on a laptop or desktop computer, go to stadia.com on a Chrome browser. To play on a phone, install the Stadia mobile app on a supported mobile device. And I was like, right, well, they've released the app and everything. This is the rollout. We were promised iPhone and iPad. This is a supported device, right? Right, Rick?
No, I'm afraid not.
No.
Unfortunately, iOS devices are still only... You can use the app to, like, access games and download and buy games and stuff, but unfortunately, you still cannot use it to actually play the games. I imagine they're still sort of arguing with Apple about being allowed to stream games onto an iOS device, because Apple loves to not let people do that. As we saw when Steam started doing their Steam Link app.
Yeah.
I think that took a while. I don't even know if that's still actually available on iOS yet.
I haven't checked.
No, but yeah, that took a while as well. But no, it is available on mobile if you have one of about 10 phones.
Well, it's in terms of branding, if you've got a Pixel 2 XL or anything above it, Samsung S8, S9, S10, or S20, the Asus ROG phone, never even heard of that, or the Razer phone or Razer phone 2. That's it. That's all you can use. Like, they don't want to be successful, Rick. They don't want anyone to play their system. They want to make a huge loss. What the hell is this? This is 6 months after the initial rollout, and I can't play on an iPhone?
I always thought that sort of the whole point of streaming games and stuff was that it cut away a lot of the tech requirements, because you basically were playing it from a server. So as long as you had a decent internet connection, you could basically play on low-end stuff.
You could play on a microwave. Like, the whole point was supposed to be, if you can run the app, then that's it. But I don't know if this is, like you say, they're doing deals with the proprietary owners of the phones. They're doing deals with Apple, or they've been doing deals with Samsung, clearly, but nobody else who makes an Android phone. Like, if that's what's holding it up, because, yeah, the whole point is it's just supposed to be a dumb screen relaying information to a server doing all the jobs. So it can't... I don't see how this is a technical problem, but, you know, that's a naive person saying that. Maybe it's a huge technical problem, I don't know. But, like, if you can run it on a crappy laptop through a browser, surely... We do have people who've actually played it. I should say, I'm complaining because I haven't been able to get in. I'm not interested in playing it on a browser. I've got a PC that can run games well. I've got an Xbox and a PlayStation. Like, I don't need this. The whole point of this was, like, we can play it on mobile phones. That's interesting. Let's see if they can make it work properly. And up until now, I haven't been able to test it. Most people haven't. We do have someone on the team who has, and that is Dave. So he's been having a look at it, and he published his views on the whole thing a couple of days ago. And he was theorizing that you could maybe get around it by opening a browser on your phone, which I tried. Doesn't work, kids. Certainly not on iOS. It clearly knows you're trying to do it on a mobile device. It's like, nah, mate. What he gets is, from playing it on his phone, I think he's got like a Pixel or something like that, the initial first thing where you open up like Destiny 2 in 1080, you know, 60 frames a second, smooth, instantly on your mobile device is wild. There is that initial like, wow, oh my, it's just here and it's just working and this is fantastic. It looks great, really brilliant. But very quickly, he says, that it just doesn't play well. Now, it's going to depend a lot on whether you're trying to use, I guess, screen controls. I assume there's some kind of overlay pop-up you can use, but mostly it's you're going to be using it as a screen and then you're collecting a controller via Bluetooth or plugging it in directly, because it's impossible to play most of the games with a floating display control system. It would be mental.
Yeah, I actually did try that. There was the PS4 Remote Play app.
Yes, I tried that too.
From ages ago, and I tried to play Red Dead Redemption 2 with a virtual controller, and it was the worst experience of my life.
I tried God of War, the 2018 one. Yeah, that don't do that. It's rubbish. So you whack up your controller, and what happens? Presumably, it'll be just as good. Not so much, apparently. So from Dave's reporting, and he's got a better than average Wi-Fi connection that he's testing this through, the streaming service often won't detect like small inputs. And some of the large inputs are predicted by the streaming service. So clearly they're using some kind of code. If you're streaming things wirelessly and there's a sudden like a microsecond break in communication or something, I assume it's using some kind of AI thing to go, ah, well, you were pushing beforehand, so you probably want to continue doing that for the next half a second, so we'll do that. And what that means is that sometimes you make very small inputs and then the game takes over because clearly there's been a tiny break in connection between you and the game, and so your little tiny movement becomes this big huge woo, and that completely destroys things when you're like trying to aim a gun in Destiny 2, for example, or just trying to walk around without smashing into a wall. Apparently he actually tested it out, so this like predicted input acceleration is what he's calling it, by like just flicking the analog stick up, down, left and right, and sometimes the control system would respond on screen by going completely mental, going all the way up, or just by not moving at all, the inputs would just get swallowed up by the game. And he came away with it at the end of it just going, this is kind of unplayable.
Yeah, that sounds deeply frustrating.
But
I don't know whether I'd rather have my controller do nothing instead of do everything, like, yeah, more so.
And that's always going to be an issue when you're doing things over Wi-Fi. And to be clear, we've had streaming services doing this kind of thing for ages, PlayStation Now, yada, yada, yada. But adding the mobile element means, like, well, this has to be Wi-Fi. It has to be wireless. There's no Ethernet connect cable option on a phone or an iPad. So you're either doing this through your Wi-Fi signal or you're doing it through 3G, 4G, or the upcoming 5G. And if there's any break in communication, then that's going to impact your game. And that's true of the wireless. It's hard enough getting a constant connection on wired connection. So doing it wirelessly, yeah. Even with the right device and a controller and everything else, he found it very, very difficult to enjoy. Which, for me, that's the death knell of this whole thing. If they can't fix it. Like, if you can't get it working on mobile or an iPad in a smooth and consistent and enjoyable playable way, then what is the point of this? Because, you know, it's good to have it available on all screens for people who are traveling. That I can see it appealing to that crowd, but that's the thing that's already been available. That's what the past 6 months has been. You can play it on a screen or a desktop or a browser, and no one's going for it.
No. It's still not huge sales, and last earnings call that Google had, they didn't bother mentioning it at all. So
really?
Clearly, yeah, they clearly are not sort of banking on it. The thing that I've been saying from the start, though, is it feels like it's in early access.
Yeah.
And if they'd just been upfront about that and said, tell you what, guys, this is the early access edition. I mean, they had the whole, oh, it's Founders Edition and all that kind of thing. But if they just said, it's the start of something, we're going to build on it. It might not work to begin with, but please support it if you're interested. We'd be more going, it's an interesting idea. I hope it starts working when they like go into full launch kind of thing.
Yeah. It'd given them some wiggle room in terms of the response. I agree.
I think if they keep at it, Stadia could be something really interesting. I mean, the whole point is that it sort of takes people away from buying dedicated consoles, and instead they just have one platform that they buy games on, and then they can play their games on everything. And I think a lot of companies are already heading towards that, because you've got Microsoft with their Project X Cloud, which is taking all their games off Xbox and onto your mobile or laptop or whatever. And PS Now is still available on PC, I believe. So like decentralizing from the console is clearly something that developers and manufacturers want to do. It's just that we're still so far away from that being a possibility, because we still need to work out how to do it right and also get the rest of the technology up to speed, like having 5G and super fast broadband in every home and all that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. And I still want to play it, to be clear. Like, I downloaded it all. I want to have a go. I want to test it for myself. It's just that the people who have tested it pretty much universally, the response is very lukewarm, particularly for mobile mode, which is what we're predominantly interested in. So, like, and now I'm waiting on, like, well, when are they going to roll it out for iOS? This promised rollout is taken 6 months to get to, like, three other devices or whatever the hell it is, a few other companies, Samsung and Acer. But, like, when do we get it? Or anyone? I mean, I've got granted, it's a low end in the grand scheme of things. I've got a Redmi Note 7 that I'm running here, Android device. Like, it's a big screen. It can run games. Like, it's just a screen. That's all you need. Let me play the thing. Let me try the thing, for God's sake.
On a positive note for Stadia, mm-hmm. I will say that one of the upcoming games is West of Loathing, which is currently a Switch exclusive.
Okay.
And is a fantastic RPG that everyone should play. So it's interesting that they've gone to Stadia over literally everything else.
Oh, that's interesting. I have not played West of Loathing.
Oh, it's excellent. You still need to get a Switch.
Yeah, it's so...
Can I talk about West of Loathing for like 2 minutes? Awesome. So it's like a stick figure Western RPG, as in like it's set in the Old West.
But yeah, I see it.
Every single character is a stick figure and it's all done in like black and white. And I think it's a sort of pseudo sequel to a Flash game that the developers made called Kingdom of Loathing.
Okay.
It's just a very, very stupid game. It has turn-based battles, but they put a lot of stuff in there so you can never sort of die from losing a turn-based battle. You just sort of appear on a different part of the map having passed out and lose some of your resources. And you get like a negative effect. You become angry over losing a battle, and that actually gives you better stats for your next battle kind of thing.
Okay.
You can fast forward through battles and you can solve puzzles as many different ways as you want. And there's about 100 different plot lines all happening at once. It's brilliant. Everyone should play it. It's fascinating that it's going to Stadia over like PS4 or Xbox or PC or literally any other console. It's gone from Switch to Stadia and that's it.
The reviews are amazing.
That's my West of Loathing shout out.
Fair play. All right. No, that sounds cool and exciting. And I will
never
be allowed
it.
To play it on my phone on Stadia. God damn it.
Well, you've got your 2 month free trial of Stadia Pro.
Will
you
be out by then?
Play it on your laptop.
Right.
It says it's... I can't tell, actually. This is the other thing with Google Stadia, is they keep saying, oh, yeah, we've got loads of games coming out, and then they never say what games they've got, and when they do say them, they're like, oh, yeah, they're coming out eventually?
Yeah, cheers for that. Like,
why? Just tell me... Give me a date, please. Yeah. I'd have no idea what's coming to that platform this year.
Dear me. Well, when I finally get my bloody hands on it, I will report back firsthand. But check out Dave's article on PocketGamer.com for more information about that. Also, if you want tips and tricks on Bark Park, yes, Bark Park, the game that Rick talked about on the last episode, for some reason, we have done an actual tips article for Bark Park, Rick.
Fantastic. I saw this and I'm so excited that Bark Park is continuing to be the big thing of the moment.
Yes, it's apparently, yeah, you were right to point it out, because this is some zeitgeisty game that the kids are playing. And you too can read helpful and handy tips such as the poop and pee is excellent, as they can be used as repellent or a stun. Leave them on the fountain, or better yet, the trees, and it will protect them from enemy capture. Sometimes I wonder about this thing we do, Rick. This gaming and writing about it.
Maybe video games really are for children. Who knows?
No. It's the kids that are wrong.
James, can I tell you about Cooking Mama?
Oh, yes. This is important stuff before we get to the new releases. I've seen like Cooking Mama popping up on my Twitter feed, and I've kind of ignored it because I don't play it. I hear there's controversy.
Oh my God, James, there is just so much. And it's making me so happy.
Good. All right.
All right.
What's going on?
So I'll give you sort of a potted history of the Cooking Mama controversy. So a couple of weeks ago, Cooking Mama Cookstar, it sort of got announced last year very quietly. There was like one press release and then it went dead. A couple of weeks ago, it just sort of landed on the eShop in the US, was immediately pulled. No reason given.
Right.
But like physical copies of the games made their way out to shops, so people were still able to buy it, and people have been playing it, and there's been a couple of reviews out, and they say, oh, it's not very good, it's a bit half-baked, if you excuse the pun. Mm-hmm. But then people started sort of digging into the code and reverse engineering it, as people are wont to do. And one thing that people found was that it contains references to blockchain.
Oh.
And needing to be always online. And this sort of also refers back to, so this first press release that I mentioned before,
yeah,
it all goes back to that, because at the time the publisher said, oh, we're investigating putting blockchain into Cooking Mama. And nobody really understood why, but it just felt like one of those things where it's, oh, let's stick as many buzzwords in as we possibly can and Cooking Mama will get coverage kind of thing.
Sure.
So there started to be this rumor going around that Cooking Mama was actually a Bitcoin miner, and it was overheating switches and breaking them and draining your battery in half an hour because it was actually using it to generate Bitcoin for the publishers.
Oh, sick.
So this has all been proven to be false. Reverse engineering and digging into it has found that there was code possibly, but it got hastily ripped out. The publisher then went on Twitter and said, oh, there was no blockchain in it whatsoever. That was never a thing. And then people have also been playing it and they've been uploading screenshots and stuff, but they've been saying, we can play it offline. So you don't need to be always online. And the reason why the battery drains is because it's poorly made.
Okay.
Then there started to be like rumors and people coming out of the woodwork from like anonymous developers at the studio who made it, who are like, oh, there's actually some legal problems going on. The IP owner, Office Create, are going to start threatening soon. There's been massive arguments between them and the publisher called Planet Entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
And all this sort of started going on. And then finally, this week, we had an official announcement from Office Create, the owner of the Cooking Mama IP, who said that Planet Entertainment had absolutely no right to publish the game.
Whoa.
Because apparently it did not meet a bunch of Office Create's like planned targets and like quality control, and they said repeatedly to Planet Entertainment, you cannot release this game, we will not allow it because we are the owners of the IP. And Planet Entertainment went, screw you, and released the game anyway.
Oh, right.
So that's why there's physical copies out there. That's why it was on the eShop. It was only after it launched on the eShop that Office Create found out that the game had been launched and told Nintendo, and Nintendo pulled it immediately because they've obviously got a great relationship with Nintendo because Cooking Mama is traditionally a Nintendo franchise.
Yeah, yeah. So this is the developer kind of going against the wishes of the publisher or the...
Who owns
the IP then?
So Office Create owns the IP.
Right.
And then you've got this publisher, which is Planet Entertainment, which is a US-based company. And then the developer is another company entirely. I think it's like One Player Creations or something like that. I'm not entirely sure on the name.
There's three companies here.
Yeah. So the developer has sort of stepped back from all this and is kind of like, we were just told to make the game. We were kind of a first-time studio. We weren't great at what we were doing. But that's all been sort of anonymized and they haven't really said anything. The publisher, Planet Entertainment, has now stepped into the ring to say that they had every right to publish the game at the time that they did. And there's no active litigation or ruling that prevents them from publishing the game at this time.
Wow.
Office Creative also said they never gave authorization for Planet Entertainment to announce a PS4 version of Cooking Mama, but they did. And that's right. Due to come out next month, but I highly doubt that it will.
Yikes. So this is usually the kind of wrangling that goes on well before a game gets to launch. But the only reason this is public is because someone pressed the publish button in a sort of screw you.
Yeah, exactly.
By the sounds of it.
It's this amazing power trip of a publisher that had no right, probably, to publish this game. Had a subpar product that even the IP owner was like, no, you can't release this. We don't want you to release this.
This is damaging the brand.
Yeah, exactly. And they went, never mind, and just hit publish and felt they'd just deal with it afterwards. So this is all going to like play out in courtrooms and be a huge public problem for a while to come. And it's giving me so much hope. So much joy, James, you don't understand.
You're just enjoying the drama.
I love the drama so much. Because the thing is about this, and I don't mean to, look down on the Cooking Mama brand or anything like that, but Cooking Mama has not been relevant for years. It was a DS game that did really well, and then they kept trying to do spin-offs of it, and none of them really caught the magic of what made Cooking Mama great.
Right.
So it's a very low-stakes drama. Because it's sort of like, it's minor players in the games industry having this major blow-up over a game that nobody even knew was coming out from an IP that no one's cared about 10 years or something.
Right.
And I love it. I love how seriously everybody is taking this.
The previous, publishing, I guess, battles that you saw in public, they're relatively few and far between, at least the ones that enter the public sphere. But I'm thinking of, Atari attacking anyone who tries to ever use an IP that they own, inverted commas. And when we say Atari, Atari being the old games publisher and developer who then died and were then bought out and as has been pointed out by a lot of people, is effectively an animated corpse of a company whose job it is to wander around and looking for anyone who is still doing anything with an Atari IP and then like slam an injunction on them.
And also license out the Atari brand to hotel builders that kind of wild stuff.
Exactly. So it's just like, what the hell are you doing with all that? But that's not fun because it's just sort of grim when they're shouting at like good developers who've done games in the past because they've dared to publish their own work or something. And you're like, oh, yeah. Whereas this sounds funny.
It's just hilarious. It's a huge comedy of errors. It's the blockchain angle, which makes it made no sense, but everyone sort of latched onto it.
That's the great thing about blockchain, is that even for people who like know about blockchain, it's still a weird area. Yeah. And like, I've been forced to know what blockchain is because I go to the conferences and we, you know, would host entire areas of the conference dedicated to it. And it was because it was a big new evolving thing. Mm. And that's obviously of a huge amount of interest to developers and everybody, basically investors who want to keep their fingers on the pulse. So I was like, right. So things on the blockchain, visible to everybody, and then the items, they have value, and you exchange the games and keep them in a vault, and so it's such a difficult thing to explain to the average person.
Yeah,
you're just like, I don't, what Bitcoin might, what?
So, and then you throw cooking mama in all that mix, and it's like, what?
Okay,
then sort of saying, well, there's no legal action against us now, so you can still buy the game off us. Like, Planet Entertainment are now selling the game directly from themselves because clearly they've just got like a stockpile of copies and they don't know what to do with them, so they're just selling it from their own website for $60 a pop, and I'm so tempted to get one. Because
I was gonna say, that's probably quite that whole like artificial scarcity thing.
Yeah, exactly.
People buying it out of curiosity now.
That's the thing. I think nobody cared about Cooking Mama up until this point, and I think this will actually probably do really good for the sales of it, because now the game is unavailable on eShop and probably will never be released. I sincerely doubt this will ever see a full release, particularly not for another 2 or 3 years for all the legal drama that's about to come about. But what that means is there's probably like a few thousand copies of this game floating around, and they're now collector's items because this game is never going to come out, but it works and you can still play it. And I think that's beautiful and fascinating, and I love it. And I really want to hold this sort of piece of weird Switch history in my hand.
Funnily enough, I was looking at the PS5 stuff recently, because obviously they've been announcing, you know, the controller came out and everyone made fun of it for looking a bit weird. And I've been looking at the idea of it being backwards compatible, and the price now, they're saying it's going to be more expensive than people think because there's been a scarcity of certain components. Mm-hmm. So it might be in the like $500, $550. If they do the $450, it'll be, you know, a loss leader. And so I was like, oh, yeah, yeah. And weighing up the idea of which one I would get, Xbox or PlayStation. And I was thinking to myself, like, what I usually do is if I got a PlayStation Pro, for example, I sold the old PS4, and with it supposedly being backwards compatible with most of PS4 stuff, I would probably like get rid of the PS4, buy a PS5. And then it hit me, I've still got PT on my PS4, which I ported over using tricks and magic from my standard PS4 unit to the Pro when I swapped hard drives. And I managed to keep it. I bet I will not be able to put it on a PS5.
No.
Which means I kind of have to hold on to that console or I lose that forever.
Or sell it for mad money.
I think it's only about a 50, 100 quid markup on eBay.
I mean, that's still a lot of money for PT.
It is, for a demo of a game that never got made. But I don't know, I kind of need that in my life because it's a relic of a thing that is particularly important to me, that series, that Silent Hill series. So now I have to hold on to this entire console that I will probably not need for anything else other than that because I can't move a digital thing over. And it's like, oh. I'm having that little internal battle over it because of one digital thing that you can't get anywhere else. So that artificial scarcity thing, it works. Makes you do stupid stuff, like not sell a console.
I am actually looking at Cooking Mama Cookstar on the game website now, and it's like, oh, I could just buy it. I could just own it. That I may never have another opportunity.
It'll probably be Bobbins.
I mean, I know for a fact that it's going to be bad, but that's never stopped me before.
True.
I played Terminator Resistance lately.
And you enjoyed it.
And I loved every second of it.
You disgust me.
I played it for 7.5 hours straight to see it through to the end.
Yes, mate. That living that quarantine life. Oh, God. Please end. Please end now. Out and about this week, let us kick things off with not one game, but about 25 or more. Gameloft Classics, which is actually how you have to refer to it. Gameloft Classics. According to the blurb, it's a celebration of 20 years of releases and includes a whole bunch of games which would otherwise have been unplayable on modern smartphones. What they've done, and you and I have both had a stab at this, is taken a ton of games from the Wayback Machine and busted them out and stuck them on your mobile. And I mean Wayback. I mean Java. And it's eye-opening. So I scanned through a lot of them going like, don't know that one, never played that, don't get that. No, ooh, Nova.
Mm.
And then started, you know, booting them all up. And then the more you boot them up, the more you realize this is the same game. They only made one game in Java, didn't they? And that game was a side-scrolling platformer. And that's what they all are, no matter what like the genre. Now, there are exceptions to this. So you have there are card games and things like that. And some puzzle action, but like, for example, I opened up, was it Modern Combat 2?
Yep, I played that one as well. That's the one I put my most time into.
Is it the popular first-person shooter that was inspired by Call of Duty?
Mm-hmm.
And it's a side-scrolling platformer, isn't it?
It is, and yeah, it actually plays really well.
You like it, did you?
Yeah, it's interesting. Quite enjoyed it.
The shoot mechanic is fascinating. So when you're moving around, you know, just directional buttons, it pops up a little overlay. The screen is, you know, portrait mode, like you're playing on an original Java phone with a tiny little crap metal joystick in the middle of the buttons.
Yeah, it's kind of like they've sort of taken a Game Boy style setup and then shoved a tiny Nokia screen in the middle of it and said, oh yeah, this is our old Java games. Now they're actually like vaguely playable because you don't have to just use 9 num keys to navigate and shoot and jump and do all the menus and stuff.
But really unresponsive.
Yeah.
And a little joystick that actually hurts your thumb after a while because it's on a Sony Ericsson 3310 or whatever it was, a little spiky bastard thing that were trying to get it to bloody move. But yeah, so you can just move the dude and he's just crawling around left to right. He's got some mates. They're doing, go, flank the thing, do the shooting. But there's elevated platforms as well. It's kind of done in that 2.5D-ish, like, it's almost isometric side-scrolling. It's not dead sideways, like classic 16-bit. But the way you shoot is, instead of aiming or anything like that, a cursor, a crosshair rather, appears over your enemy and it shrinks and shrinks and shrinks and shrinks until it goes red. And then it starts off big again. So it does a little cycle of animation. And the idea is wait till it goes red and you press fire. That's how you shoot people. that's rubbish, that is.
Yeah, it's not. We've sort of moved on a bit from
because you're not taking cover or anything. You're standing there being shot. And because you're just waiting for the thing to go red so you can press fire. And you're like, oh, this does suck the momentum out of things somewhat.
I mean, you can still shoot.
Yeah, but it doesn't really do much. You have to wait for a headshot.
You don't have to. I got a few kills not doing headshots.
If you're a sweet sniper root boy, then yeah, you 100% have to. I kill with style, buddy. It reminds me of Yoshi's Island. The aiming the eggs bit, the little dotted line that comes out, moves automatically up and down and up and down, and you have to wait for it to hit the point, and then you do it, rather than you actually physically moving or adjusting it like in an Angry Birds. It reminded me of that, and I thought, ah, that's rubbish, isn't it? Although it's much quicker on Yoshi's Island.
As much as you say, like the feeling of the games is kind of rubbish, and I agree. Like the games themselves, obviously, a lot has changed over like the last 20 years, and that's what they're sort of celebrating. Is this is their compilation of games from like almost 20 years ago at this point?
Yeah.
There is like a sweet nostalgia to it as well.
There is.
I've obviously the games are a bit meh, but they sort of took me back to a simpler time. Where, you know, we would just play crummy games that we had to download over WAP onto our little phones that could barely access the internet.
Sweet WAP.
And it was just, it just felt right to me. Because a lot of the time, like, I'm obviously a lot younger than you, James, not to rub it in, but...
Oi!
But, like, I was sort of using a cheap phone that my parents got me, and they were like, oh, we'll only give you £10 credit, like, a year, so don't go spending it on games or anything, because we don't want to top it up, and you're only supposed to use this phone in case of emergency and all this kind of thing. So I missed out a lot on sort of WAP gaming, and now this is kind of like my opportunity to go back and sort of I used to see all my friends playing these awful games, and now I can go back and be like, hell yeah, this is what I was missing out on. And it turns out it's not much, but
not missing out a lot. At the time it was impressive.
Yeah.
So just to give you a little rundown of some of the games, we're talking about glorious releases like Miami Nights 2, The City Is Yours, Midnight Bowling 3, Midnight Pool, Modern Combat 2, Black Pegasus, which is what Rick and I were playing there, Motocross Trial Extreme, My Life in New York. We've got Nova, so the kind of original Nova before they did, I don't know what even they called it when they did a proper first-person version that appeared on the App Store, iOS. But this is, again, it's just a side-scroll. It's more like a Metroid-type game. They've got the obligatory Texas Hold'em Poker. Got to have one of those in there. What's the other one that I played a bunch of? Not Diamond Rush. Oh, Gangstar! Gangstar 2, oh, Kings of LA. Wow. Yes, mate. So the Gangstar franchise, you might be aware of, which is the GTA spin-off. Not a spin-off license, obviously, influenced by whatever rip-off. Call it what you want. And I've reviewed a couple of these, and they've been kind of sucky iOS versions or mobile versions of the games. This one, again, it's like a top-down isometric wander around, and you're still busting cars. It is impossible to drive a car with Java controls when you have to push up to go forward. Oh, it's so bad, Rick. So bad. And Hero of Sparta. I played a bunch of that, which is their God of War.
Nice.
And again, top-down, slash side-scrolling, hackety-slashy. Actually, this is probably the best one, I think. Combat, the actual hackety-slash of it all, feels quite nice. Shows you how much difference a decent bit of animation and impact and visual feedback does to make you like feel like you've hit something properly. And this one gives you a real nice, I am carving through the all these horrible bloody skeletons and Persians and all the rest of it. Weird monsters. That feels quite nice. But as you say, it's more of an artifact. It's more of a thing where you look back at it and go, ah, this is quaint, isn't it? This is how things used to be in the 2008s. And for that reason alone, I'd say download it and give it a look, because it's kind of fascinating.
Yeah, it's a really interesting look into how far mobile gaming in particular has come, and games in general. And it's really cool that it's just been released free.
Android only, though.
Yeah, that is weird. But like the store listings I've seen and stuff, like, oh, it does contain IAPs, and I got a push notification just before we started doing this podcast from the game. It's like, oh, you've got free coins added to your thing. It's like, but there's nowhere to spend them. Like, I don't understand.
Yeah, I couldn't see that either. The only thing I can see is that there's a more games icon at the bottom of the screen that pushes you to, here are other great games from Gameloft, and it gives you like their recent releases that you can go and download. But they're just links to games that are mostly free. I don't see where you spend the cash.
Yeah, so I'm not sure if maybe there was some sort of free-to-play mechanics, and then last minute they went, you know what, we should just rip these out. Because all the messaging that they've sent out is like, oh, the game is totally free. This is just sort of a gift to thank everybody for keeping us alive for the last 20 years.
Yeah.
And also, I do want to give a shout-out to a game that I did not play, but I think it has the best name in the entire collection.
I'm scanning through. I'm going to see if I can see what you think is the best. Avalanche Snowboarding. No. Block Breaker Deluxe 2. No, that's not good. I mean, Brain Challenge 3, Think Again.
That is quite good. You've got to play the player here, not the game. You've got to think about what I would think is.
That's true. All right,
it's
then.
It's hilarious.
It's going to be something. I'm looking for pervy ones, Rick. I'm not going to lie. That's all I'm looking for. is there anything? My Life in New York. That's a bit rubbish, isn't it? Vampire Romance.
No, that was a good one. No, you
gone then.
You went
what
too
you
far, unfortunately. You skipped over high school hookups.
Oh.
Which is just a terrifying collection of words if you give it more than like 10 seconds thought.
I'm going to say something I shouldn't say on a family podcast, but that's just a drop down on Pornhub, isn't it? That's what that is. Like, let's be honest here. Let's be real. We've all been inside for a long time. That's what I'm going to associate with Gameloft Classics now. Gameloft PR, if you're listening, I'm so sorry.
They were trying to invite me to their offices in Paris. Now they're definitely not going to do that.
No, sorry, I've ruined it for everyone.
This?
Apologies. No, but I reckon it's not on iOS for the same reasons we were talking about with Stadia. I reckon this is like, oh, it's an app that gives you access to multiple different games.
Yeah.
It's like a little, even if it's free, it's like a little shop front and Apple. They do not like that. They do not like internal curation of other games within apps on their store. So I have a feeling this might not ever come to iOS. We'll see. But if you have an Android device, give it a download. It's a fascinating little window into... It feels like it's accelerated a lot quicker on mobile, you know what I mean? Like, if you look at the progress that we've made between 2008 and now on mobile, it's like about maybe 20, 25 years of gaming on, like, console, for example.
Yeah.
Feels like it's happened a lot in a more compressed timeline on mobile. But, yeah, fascinating stuff. So, speaking of old-fashioned games from the past brought onto mobile... iOS only this time, Castle of White Knight. This is a proper old-fashioned RPG, or at least that's what it is emulating. So it is doing that Eye of the Beholder style, where you are given a first-person perspective, but you advance one tile at a time, one little screen at a time, and it's all black and white, and you go up, down, left, right, and turn, and you're going tuk, 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 and the screen is just going jip, 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 like, you know, one block of movement forward, turn the corner, jip, 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 and you're exploring dungeons, and then you get into fights, and it just puts up the image of a goblin or whatever on the screen, and then you have to do fechting and choose your inspect or your attack or whatever, and then it kicks your ass very quickly because it's hard, because it's an old-fashioned RPG-style game. It's another one where you look back at it and go, my God, we put up with an awful lot of stuff, didn't we? Ooh, mercy. But at the same time, there is a kind of weird, claustrophobic, good atmosphere that these games give off. You really do feel like, I don't know, you feel for some reason like you're the same height as the corridor that you're in.
Hmm.
I don't know if that's the way it's just presented, but for some reason, I always feel like I'm trapped. It feels like you're crawling through like an air vent. I don't know if this is something my brain does when I play these games, but I always feel incredibly hemmed in, and they're quite good for atmosphere. And as with all games that don't have great visuals and are drawn in, you know, very basic sketched lines, you put your imagination to work.
Mm.
And there's a lot to be said for that, I always think. Like, clunky inputs and controls is one thing, and working within your confines, and, you know, that can breed great stuff when you're restricted and all the rest of it. But mostly, when you had very, very low poly or low resolution visuals, you had to use your head. That, again, added to the atmosphere, forced you to invest a little bit harder or work a little bit harder to conjure the world, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
This sort of does that. I've played it for about an hour, and it's tough and it's a bit frustrating, but it does have that feel. And I don't know, I sort of enjoyed it. This is iOS only, mind. I don't know if it's premium. I should probably check that.
I think it is. I think it's like $2.99.
There you go, yeah. Number 200 in role-playing, and it's got a 5-star rating.
Not bad.
Not too bad, although I don't think it's been reviewed a lot. Yeah, big sprawly maps once you unlock them all. The quite nice thing about it is every time you advance forward, you've got the mini-map in the corner, and that block then appears on the mini-map.
Mm-hmm.
So you see the world expanding, where you see this kind of giant blocky map start to appear gradually. There is something fundamentally satisfying about watching that grow, about seeing your progress kind of balloon outwards. So Castle of the White Knight is available right now, $2 Einstein on iOS. What else have we got?
I had a quick go on Dungeon Restaurant, I believe it was called. And I was not hugely taken by it. So it's basically, it's sort of like a cooking game, and people come into your dungeon restaurant and you have to cook them weird and gross things. So the first thing you cook is like fried cockroaches with onions and whatever. But the thing is, so instead of sort of like super easy controls, it gives you this recipe and then sort of wants you to memorize, like, right, you've got to cook this many cockroaches for this long with this salt. You also need to chop these onions and cook them and do this and this kind of thing. And then the guided tutorial takes you to the next menu, and then the next tutorial is just an overlay on the cooking screen with arrows pointing to everything that needs to be done. And then it's kind of like, well, have fun. And it's like, what? I don't remember. Okay. So it's like, oh, I'll fry this cockroach and throw in some sugar because it tells me to do that. And I've chopped this onion and I don't know if I've chopped it right because there's no like indication. And then like, I just sort of like followed it blindly. And then I gave my dish over and the guy was like, this is awful. Gave me a C and 7 coins and then left. And I was like, oh. So
I fear you've bounced off there.
That's, yes, almost immediately.
That's the bad onboarding, which actually Dan, who has written the kind of release articles and plays a lot of these games to try them out, actually backs you up and says it's really busy on the screen. And there are early learning hurdles, but once you get over them, it is quite good fun.
Yeah, I'm sure if I took the time and really sort of sat down and tried to work and like remembered recipes and all that kind of stuff, I would probably find a deep and engaging game, but I do not have the time or energy to spend learning like how to cook when I am barely even capable of cooking in the real world and would rather focus my efforts on that instead.
Well, I know this is the importance of onboarding, of getting the first, especially on mobile, getting the first couple of minutes of your game right.
Yeah.
And not immediately turning on and kicking you to a shop, which more and more do and is horrible. So that is out right now. I think it's free, Dungeon Restaurant.
It is free. Yep.
It's playable right now. We've got Beyond This Side, which also came out, which is a point-and-click, very, very pretty-looking mystery game. So you are playing as Sam, dude with a missing wife, and you have to go and track down what happened to her, clues which involve finding her severed hand. It looks like the presentation is really lovely. There's a bloom to everything. There's a weird like soft glow to all of it, where obviously it's done in a very nice painterly style, but it looks quite good. Problem is, I've watched some of the game being played. I haven't played it myself. And standard point and click fare, a lot of people have completed it are very cross because apparently it's very short. It's one chapter only that's currently out right now.
Right.
And I think it's sort of pricey, so I'm gonna double check this.
It's $2.99.
Is it just $2 on it?
Yes. Okay. So it's still that's still kind of a lot. If you're expecting a huge game and you get one chapter, I think that's a big ask.
At a version of the App Store you pull up on mobile, it's been like review bombed basically for it. Mm-hmm. But it's the first chapter of several chapters and people are hoping that they get released for free as well to bolster it up rather than you paying individually. So we'll see how that goes. But nicely done, if a little short, seems to be the takeaway for that. So Beyond This Side, that's available right now. Also on the list is Dictator, spelt D-I-C-T-A-T-E-R. And that's because it's a potato pun.
Hey.
It's a strategy game, hex-based strategy, where you lead a nation of potatoes. And Dan says, apparently, it's actually not bad. It's kind of messing with diplomacy and army building and, like, you know, civ stuff. It's a bit Civilization, only with potatoes and, you know, a sense of humour. But apparently the interface takes a bit of getting used to.
A lot of that this week.
Yeah, or we're just being particularly picky. But no, he says, it's surprisingly, like, all right, and the potato thing doesn't get as old as you think it might. But yes, maybe it needs a bit of a rejig on the interface. But that is currently available, iOS and Android. Dictator is the name of that one. I'll also mention something that came out last week, which is Beat Hazard 2. I kind of promised I'd update when this came out. And this is a game, the original one, which was, I think, was like 2014-15, I forget, we mentioned it a few podcasts ago, but great big alien sci-fi shmup, but it's powered by music. And I think it's been out on Steam for ages, and you just use your Spotify playlist or whatever, and that music generates the environment and the enemies, and they've been able to do it on mobile. I still don't know whether you're just turning Spotify on and that's what's making it work. I'm not sure, but I'm going to download this and give it a go, because I like shmups, and the first one was good. And it's one of those proper super uber neon hectic ones. Well, hectic if you put a hectic song on. Probably quite chill if you put Enya in the background. I think I might try that. I think that might be the video that gets banned on YouTube because we're using copyrighted music. But I want to do the She lives in a castle, you know.
Welcome to the Pocket Gamer Enya cast.
It's perfect. Like, the fact that Enya lives in an actual castle, like, on her own. She's a massive introvert and, like, lives on a castle, records all her albums at home, releases them, and then makes millions and millions because there's a huge market for her stuff still to this day. People love Enya. And I think that's great. Flinging her magic from the spires of her medieval castle. That's wonderful. Okay, Beat Hazard 2 out right now. So, Oh, we'll stop there, Rick. This has gone weird. It started weird and only got weirder. Yeah. So I think we better cut our losses. Thank you for listening. As always, we hope you're doing well and keeping safe and sound. And as we found out today or the day before, this is all going to go on for a bit longer for us in the UK, another 3 weeks of this. Hang in there. We know it's tough. And we're all at varying ends of our various tethers at the minute. But don't worry, there's an end to all of this. And we will continue to laugh and chat and Zoom and game our way through this nonsense. And see us all fresh as daisies on the other side. Mental daisies. So thanks for joining me, Rick.
Thank you for having me. It's been weird and wonderful as always. And just as a final note, I have now ordered Cooking Mama Cookster.
Oh, you, there's no helping you, Rick. Thank you for listening. Stay well, stay safe, and we will see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.